Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On June 28, 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court delivered its decision on parents involved in community schools versus Seattle School District. The court was asked to consider the school district's use of race in assigning students to schools. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, Gail Harriet, a law professor from the University of San Diego School of Law, offers her own analysis of the recent decision. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Harriet.
This is Gail Harriet at the University of San Diego with a few words on parents involved in community schools versus Seattle School District No. 1 and Meredith versus Jefferson County Board of Education. These long-awaited twin cases were decided by the Supreme Court today, June 28, 2007. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We've got another 5-4 decision with Kennedy in the middle. The cases involve school integration plans. Under the Seattle plan, students may attend the high school of their choice, but race is used to break the tie when a high school that is not considered racially balanced is oversubscribed, as several of the more popular ones are. In other words, if you're a member of the less well-represented race, and race is defined as either white or non-white, they're not into multiracialism here, you're likely to be admitted to one of these popular schools. If you're not from the underrepresented race, you'd better pick a different school. Under the Louisville plan, it's elementary schools that are at issue. Elementary school students are assigned to a cluster of several schools in the general part of the county near to them, and their parents are permitted to designate a first and second choice among the schools in the cluster. According to Chief Justice Roberts' opinion for the majority, decisions to assign students to schools within each cluster are based on available space within the schools. But if a school has reached, quote, the extremes of the racial guidelines, close quote, a student whose race would contribute to their school's racial imbalance will not be assigned there, even if there's space. So again, if you're from the right race, you are more likely to get your first or second choice than if you're from the wrong race. And again, only two races count, in this case, black or non-black. So that's a quick version of the facts. Let me begin by saying a word about what these cases are not, because that is crucial. First, the majority agrees that these are not remediation cases in the tradition of Swan versus Charlotte Mecklenburg, Milliken versus Bradley, and Missouri versus Jenkins. By that, I mean the cases do not center on the governmental authority, judicial or otherwise, to remedy the past wrong of segregated schools. Yes, Jefferson County, where Louisville is located, did operate separate schools for blacks and whites many years ago. And yes, Jefferson County went through its court-ordered forced busing phase, which officially lasted until the year 2000. But in that year, the district court found that the school system had, quote, eliminated the vestiges associated with the former policy of segregation and its pernicious effects, close quote. Whatever the ills of Louisville schools today, the court has found that they are not the proximate result of previously segregated schools. The school board thus cannot claim that it is remedying a past wrong. The same goes for Seattle, which never had separate school systems in the first place. It's important to bear in mind that insofar as many neighborhoods in Louisville or Seattle do not reflect the overall racial composition of the area, that is not a wrong in itself. It therefore does not give rise to any special powers of remediation that would exist if there had been a wrong. Now, Justice Breyer evidently doesn't agree with this, since he cites remediation cases to justify the Seattle and Louisville procedures. But Chief Justice Roberts, and I think Roberts is right here, handles it by writing, quote, Justice Breyer's dissent takes a different approach to these cases, one that fails to ground the result it would reach in law, close quote. Now, those are tough words. Roberts makes it clear that if Breyer's view were to prevail, it would be difficult to limit governmental power to discriminate in general. Second, the majority members agree that these are not diversity cases in the tradition of Bakke or Grutter. Even assuming that racial diversity serves the same purpose in elementary and high schools as it was found to serve in Bakke at UC Davis Medical School and in Grutter at the University of Michigan Law School, and that's an issue the majority does not decide, Seattle and Louisville haven't come close to complying with the requirements of strict scrutiny articulated in Grutter. Both Bakke and Grutter made it clear that, among other things, race must not be the only measure of diversity. Students with other unusual characteristics must have a chance to be considered diverse, too. In Seattle and Louisville, however, race was the only measure of diversity, and it's the only factor that would prevent a student from getting an open seat at the school of his choice. Neither Seattle nor Louisville distributed the children of missionaries, for example, throughout the system. They didn't care whether each school gets a tuba and a piccolo player for the school band, or that talented athletes are distributed widely. All they worried about was race. In Louisville, each school must have at least 15%, but no more than 50% non-whites. In Seattle, each school must have at least 31%, but no more than 51% whites. That makes these cases a lot more like Grotz versus Bollinger, the case the University of Michigan lost, than like Grutter versus Bollinger, the case it won. Okay, if it's not a remediation case, or cases, and if they're not cases about securing the benefits of diversity for education, just what are these cases? Well, the opinion is somewhat less clear on that. The five-member majority does not hesitate to apply strict scrutiny, but Justice Kennedy opts out of part of the discussion here. He concurs only in the conclusion on narrow tailoring. Essentially, the five-member majority holds that whatever the merits of the school district's goals, whether you call them racial balancing or something else, the school districts did not sufficiently consider race-neutral methods of attaining those goals. The court notes that both Seattle and Louisville are substantially racially integrated and that racially discriminatory assignment actually plays only a very minor role in the overall school assignment system. Chief Justice Roberts' discussion of racial balancing and his statement that racial balancing has long been held to be insufficient to justify racial discrimination evidently failed to impress Kennedy because he did not join in that part of Roberts' opinion. What's Kennedy up to? Well, it appears that he is mainly interested in not getting so carried away with the notion that any consideration of race is bad, things get overboard. It's really not clear that he needed a separate opinion for all this, but he states, and I quote here, "School boards may pursue the goal of bringing together students of diverse backgrounds and races through other means, including strategic site selection of new schools, drawing attendance zones with general recognition of the demographics of neighborhoods, allocating resources for special programs, recruiting students and faculty in a targeted fashion, and tracking enrollments, performance, and other statistics by race. These mechanisms are race conscious, but do not lead to different treatment based on race, so it is unlikely any of them would demand strict scrutiny to be found permissible." Close quote on Justice Kennedy there. In general, the Kennedy approach leaves open questions that perhaps the other members of the majority might have preferred to decide. How important is this case in the grand scheme of things? Well, it's certainly significant, but it's always been somewhat less important than the hype. And given the way it was decided, it may be even a tad less important now than it might have been. Prior to the decision, some of those with left-of-center politics saw this case as a do-or-die battle to save Brown versus the Board of Education from being overturned by conservatives. I'm not making this up. This view is, well, you know, it's a bit crazy. At no point has any conservative argued in connection with this case that the state ought to be able to discriminate on the basis of race in school assignments. That's the view being taken by the so-called defenders of Brown on the left. And with friends like that, who needs enemies? But those with right-of-center politics have also had a bit of a strange view about this case sometimes. Some hoped that it would provide an opportunity for the new court to overturn the decision in Grutter versus Bollinger upholding racial preferences in law school admissions. That was crazy too, ladies and gentlemen. The issues are just too different. There is no need to overturn Grutter to decide the cases that were before the court today in favor of the plaintiffs. No truly conservative court would go out of its way to overrule a case like that here. Indeed, the narrow basis of the majority's decision today, narrow tailoring, with that narrow basis, it's possible that we haven't even seen the last of assignment policies like those at issue today. We may be seeing school districts in the future making arguments that they have exhausted their alternatives and therefore should be able to have policies like those that Seattle and Louisville were using. Alternatively, there may be schools that will try to employ a racial preference policy that will pass muster under Grutter versus Bollinger. What can I say? This may be a victory for those who oppose racial preferences of any kind, but it's a modest victory. The beat goes on. This is Gail Harriet.